Adventures of Thomas the Tank Engine.
It was snowing on the island of Sodor as Thomas the Tank Engine puffed and chuffed as hard as he could till at last he reached the station. His friend Percy peep-peep with relief. "The Fat Controller wants to talk to you, Thomas," said Percy. "He's cross because you're late." "It's not my fault I'm late," panted Thomas.
"Quiet," shouted the Fat Controller. "Thomas, you are late, and really useful engines are never late."
I'm sorry, sir," stammered Thomas. "I had to stop and help Trevor out of the snow, sir."
"Silence," shouted the Fat Controller. "This is my railway, and I will not listen to excuses."
And at this point, Thomas steamed forward and crushed the Fat Controller to a pulp. Then Thomas rolled back and forth over his body, shouting, "Death to the ruling classes."
"Trill Percy. I've always wanted to do that."
"So have I," cheered Annie.
"Me too," said Claribel. "I hated the Fat Git."
Diesel chuffed alongside Thomas. "How shall we dispose of the body?"
"I know," piped Percy. "Harold the helicopter could top it up with his rotor blades. Then when I chuff-chuff past Farmer Redkin's barn, we could throw the bits to the pigs."
"Good idea," said Thomas. "We'll have to murder the station master, of course. Otherwise, he might tell the police." And Thomas and Annie and Claribel and Percy and Diesel all chased after the panicking station master and trundled over him until he looked like a big blotch of strawberry jam.
"That was fun, wasn't it?" said Thomas. "Now, let's have some group sex."
That was Thomas the Tank Engine Turns a Bit Tasty, one of a new series of children's stories with that horrible English smugness taken out. Next week, Paddington Bear becomes a serial killer. It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show, and here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Thank you. Good evening. Good evening and welcome to the show. Later on, we'll be reviewing Nicholas Ridley's autobiography, Sneering Can Be Fun, with a foreword by Kenneth Clark.
And also later, Lloyd Grossman will be here talking about his battle with illness and revealing how he's been a lifelong sufferer from irritable bowel syndrome.
I tell you what, though, Andy, I feel great now I've given up smoking, you know.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Nick.
No, it's just that I feel so much better, you know? My sense of taste and smell have come back. It's just wonderful. The other day I was out for a walk, took a deep breath, and I could really smell the exhaust fumes and the winos and the dog dirt on the pavement. It's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm pleased with Nick.
And you see, I'm not using cigarettes now to deaden my emotions anymore. I'm not afraid to express myself. Like, you know, if someone shoves me, say, on the tube, no problem, doesn't bother me, I just whack him in the gob. Which is much healthier.
Well, what if the bloke you smack is bigger than you?
Well, I'm fit enough to run away now, am I? More lung power. Yeah, it's marvellous.
Well, look, I hope you do finally manage to quit this time, Nick, because let's face it, you have tried before.
I know. But I know I've really cracked it this time, because the real test of if you've packed in smoking, right, is if you can still smoke the occasional cigarette now and again without starting regularly. And my willpower is so strong, I can smoke up to 50 or 60 occasional cigarettes every day.
Yeah. Actually, Nick, do you think we could talk about something more interesting than your quitting smoking, which basically offers us every other topic in the known universe? What is that strange object round your neck? What is it?
Don't touch it! You'll interfere with its vibrations!
Oh, I see, it's a vibrator, is it?
It's not a vibrator, Andy. It's my crystal.
Your crystal?
You never heard of crystal therapy? Every crystal, right, gives off a special vibration, and if you find the right one for you, it strengthens your life force, reinforces your aura, and corrects all your character defects.
And you can get by with just the one crystal, can you?
I tell you, crystal therapy is brilliant. Mm. Just think, Andy, it was formed like billions of years ago, okay? When the only life on Earth was primitive single-cell creatures, and now I've got it. It's giving off this really warm glow.
Well, you're probably making it feel nostalgic, Nick, you know?
So how's it going with your grumpy neighbour?
Guess what's up now. He's only sent us a solicitor's letter complaining that his pedigree Labrador has been made pregnant by our mongrel.
Oh, no.
What a thing to get worked up about. I mean, dogs get pregnant, don't they? I mean, all right, admittedly, our kids were holding his dog down while our dog did the business, but I'm sure Patch would have got round to it eventually, you know?
Well, it's just nature, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, the problem with that neighbour, he's just a miserable person, you know? That's all
there is to it.
And I tell you, it's all subtext, you know? He's never really forgiven Pip and Robbie for borrowing his ladder that time.
They'd never have taken it if they'd have known,
I told him that, Nick.
How long was he on the roof?
Well, funny enough, we went away on holiday that day without realising he was up there. But as I understand it, after a couple of nights, there was a cold snap and he was able to slide down one of the icicles.
So what's he moaning about then?
God knows.
And now it's time for How to Annoy. And this week, How to Annoy a Religious Fundamentalist.
Hello, I'm Jesus Christ. Have you got a couple of lagers for me and my mate Mohammed? I want a Diet Coke for Beelzebub.
Well, listeners, with me now I have Minister for Transport, Malcolm Rifkin.
I'm sorry, I'm late.
That's OK, Minister. Now... now, Minister, recently we've seen a major shift in the government's policy towards the rail network. Now, why is that?
Well, it all started at a cabinet meeting, because we're allowed to talk at them nowadays.
All right. And...
we were all sitting round seeing how congested the roads were getting, and then completely out of the blue, somebody said, maybe we could encourage people to go by train and so get them off the roads. Well, there was a stunned silence, and then the Prime Minister, John...
Major.
He said, bugger me if that isn't the answer. Mm-hmm. And so, bingo, that became our policy. I know it's a bit radical, but...
Yeah, it's not exactly a new idea, is it? The public have been saying that for years.
And they were right. I take my hat off to them.
Right, yes. Now, how exactly are you proposing to get people to use trains?
Oh, that's easy. We're going to price them off the roads.
Oh, I see, right.
Indeed, we expect to raise considerable revenue with our new pay-as-you-drive scheme.
Right. Doesn't pay-as-you-drive presuppose that the traffic's moving?
Well, we haven't sorted out all the details yet. But, yes, you're right. Perhaps we should change it to a pay-as-you-just-sit-there-swearing scheme.
Yeah, I see. Now, I understand you also plan to privatise the rail network. Now, how exactly is that going to work?
Simple. British Rail Services and private trains will compete along the existing rail lines. In other words, passengers will be waiting on the platform, and the BR train and the private train will race to pick them up. And obviously, whichever one gets there first wins their custom.
Yeah, what if it's a dead heat? There might be a bit of a crash, mightn't there?
Well, we haven't sorted out all the details yet. Kenneth Baker lost a cigarette packet that we jotted the policy down on.
Oh, I see. So what is your attitude to rail safety, crashes, etc.?
Well, the government's policy on rail crashes has changed a little since Mrs. Thatcher left power. Under John...
Major.
Yes, under John Major. As a government, we are saying to British Rail, we think crashes are a bad idea. Now, Mrs. Thatcher, of course, believed in actively encouraging crashes on the grounds that visiting victims made such excellent photo opportunities.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Minister. I've got one last question. Do you feel that these private contractors who tow cars away do a good job?
Absolutely. They're cost-efficient and very quick.
Well, they're certainly quick. They've loaded your Daimler onto the van in about 45 seconds there. I've been watching them through the window.
Hey, you bastards! You want your face? I'm going to hang this job later with you, this.
Well, thank you, Transport Minister Malcolm Rifkin. Have you been, Nick?
Oh, just helping those blokes load the Daimler.
Oh, right, yeah.
Funny thing happened to me, though, this morning. Mm. This Russian tramp came up to me and asked if I could spare him the price of a restructured economy.
I tell you, this recession's biting everywhere, you know, and it's terrible. I mean, all these small businesses going bust.
Well, actually, Andy, the number of small businesses is, in fact, growing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, because for every small business that goes bust, there's 10 big businesses becoming small businesses.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway, later on in the show, we'll be looking at the American Civil War, when the North fought the South to liberate blacks from economic repression, and asking, who won?
And also, Britain's first astronaut, Helen Sharman, will be telling us how one of the curious effects of being weightless is that you start looking like John Major.
Of course, she wasn't Britain's first astronaut, you know.
No?
No, my cousin was.
Your cousin?
Yeah, my cousin Tez.
You've met him, haven't you? He's from Yorkshire. We're virtually identical. In fact, the only way you can tell us apart is that he's a real drunken yob. What are you looking at me like that for?
No reason, man. So how did he end up being an astronaut?
Well, he went to Florida on a package tour, and at Disney World, he stole Mickey Mouse's costume for a laugh, put it on, got drunk, got on the wrong bus, thought he was climbing up the scaffolding on the outside of his hotel. Turns out, he's climbing up the side of the space shuttle.
Well, wait a minute, how did he get past security at Cape Canaveral?
Well, he was wearing a Mickey Mouse outfit, right?
Yeah.
Well, they thought he was Dan Quayle.
Oh, right, yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, Mission Control. I'm preparing to do the routine check on the solar panels. Who the hell are you?
What do you mean, who the hell am I? Who the hell are you?
Listen, buddy, I don't know how you got here or where you're from, but you're aboard a United States spacecraft in orbit.
Well, I'm not paying extra.
Jesus, he's got no helmet. Look, how's he managing to breathe without oxygen?
Have you ever been to Rotherham?
Look here, mister.
Tez. Everyone calls me Tez. Finest panel beater in West Yorkshire.
Well, look, Tez. We're up here on a very important scientific mission. And you appear to have vomited into our mainframe computer.
So? I'm on my holidays. Get us a beer and I'll be all right.
There is no beer on board.
No beer on board? What kind of a scientific mission is this?
We are recording a message on videotape which will then be launched into deep space so that any alien life form that finds it may have some idea of life on planet Earth.
All right. Well, give us that bloody camera over here, then. Get off, you'll have a fat lip underneath the helmet. Hello, aliens? Now, I don't know what these yanks have already told you about planet Earth, but it's a pound to a penny, it's a load of cobblers. Because all yanks can do is shoot their gobs off about how bloody marvellous America is. Well, it ain't. Don't believe a word. It's full of yanks who know note, except how to force 3 tonne of scrap metal round the kids' teeth. And go on and on about how great America is. Well, it ain't. It's crap. Only place on planet Earth worth visiting is Yorkshire. It's beautiful. Countryside's beautiful. Even the pit stacks are beautiful. They make proper beer in Yorkshire. And folk are honest, hard-working, clean-living and friendly. And if you visit, we'll kick your bloody head in. Because you're not welcome. We've worked hard to make Yorkshire the paradise it is. And we don't want bloody spacemen coming in and spoiling it. So bugger off back to your own galaxy. Bet you're useless at cricket anyway. Right, there's your video. Someone going to show us out shit then, eh? Come on, love, you'll do. Would you get stuck up an air duct for a couple of hours? What do you say, yeah?
Oh, for God's sakes, grow up.
Bloody hell. Hey, I'll tell you what, it's like that film Alien, isn't it, this spaceship? Have you seen Alien, where that little monster's running around all over the shop? And then they shoot him out into outer space through the airlock.
Quite like this.
So let me get this right. They killed your cousin.
Oh, no, no, he's still alive.
What, floating around in outer space?
Yeah, yeah, they picked him up the other day on the Hubble telescope. He was mooning into the lens and singing Jeffrey Boycott Walks on Water. Oh. What are you doing?
Oh, sorry, mate. Yeah, I was just having a quick look to see if there's anything in the paper about my TV franchise bid.
You've bid for the franchise of an ITV company?
Yeah, yeah.
But Andy, running an ITV company costs millions of pounds.
Oh, come off it, Nick. You've seen ITV's programmes. How could they cost millions of pounds? No. This franchise business is all down to the quality of programmes you can offer. In fact, I appeared before the ITC this week to discuss my bid.
Rude.
Well, we've looked through your submission, Mr. Hamilton.
Right,
and certainly,
yes.
If we feel that your ideas for change on ITV are innovative and radical. For instance, you say you'd broadcast a decent programme on Saturday nights. Well, that's extremely radical. In fact, frankly, we're not sure if the public are really quite ready for that. In fact, we're a bit worried that maybe your approach is a bit too radical. For instance, I notice you're proposing to make a religious programme that mentions God.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just that I think that religious programmes should be powerful, yet at the same time, populist and accessible.
So I see. And according to this, your flagship religious programme would be Watch Out, Jehovah's About. Home videos of people breaking the Ten Commandments who are then judged, excommunicated and finally stoned
by the studio audience. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just trying to put a little conviction back into the God slot, you know?
And you would actually broadcast sinners being pelted with stones?
Yeah.
Honestly. And why have you chosen Giles Brandreth as a presenter?
Well, you never know, a stray stone, we might get lucky.
No, I'm sorry, we can't allow it. And why do you want to mess about with programmes that are established favourites? Blind Date is a perfectly acceptable form of entertainment. Blind Screw is not.
Well, it would save a lot of money. It's what the programme's about anyway. I mean, why bother sending contestants on those weekends to Paris? You know, just get them to do it there and then in the studio, you know, and have Cilla Black urging them on, saying, go on, Chuck, give it a lot of bottles.
Please! I think we've made our position clear on this. Now then, your plans for sport are frankly bewildering. You say you'd ban the coverage of golf. Why?
Well, because golf's boring, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, the ball always goes down the hole in the end, doesn't it? I mean, no surprises. I have suggested to the golfing authorities that they change the rules so that the hole can move around a bit as the ball approaches, but I've yet to receive a response, which I think is a little remiss of them, actually, isn't it?
And you say you won't cover boxing because the ref always stops it just as it starts to get interesting. And finally, you say you will cover football, but only provided Jimmy Hill receives an electric shock whenever he says something sanctimonious.
Yeah, well, that sounds reasonable enough. Now, if we can turn to your proposals for drama.
Yeah.
We read with interest the script for your mooted miniseries. We just wonder, is the sex scene involving Jane Seymour necessary?
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought it was compulsory. I'm sorry. There always seems to be one. I thought it must be a stipulation in the Broadcasting Act or something. Look, I'll take it out. I'm not sure she was right for the part of Golda Meir anyway, so...
Now, putting aside your financial package for a second, mm-hmm. and the question of whether a loan from your mum will provide a firm capital base, mm-hmm. I think we have to address the central issue here.
Which is?
Which is, Mr. Hamilton, you're an inexperienced broadcaster whose programmes appear to offer a diet of unrelenting lowbrow, violence and sex. And we would regard that as unacceptable for acquiring this franchise.
Oh, I see.
But as the alternative is giving it to that smug git Richard Branson, we're prepared to live with it. Congratulations, the franchise is yours.
Cheers.
Later on, William Waldegrave will be explaining how he doesn't like the term hospital. He prefers to think of them as hotels with good first aid facilities.
Yeah. Well, you may laugh, audience, but that's a very cheap and easy line to take, Nick, isn't it? The government has a duty to rationalise the health service.
Here we go, yeah. I suppose it's inevitable as you get older, Andy.
What?
Well, you've become more right-wing.
Oh, rubbish.
It's true. For instance, when I first met you, you were firmly opposed to capital punishment. Now you're in favour.
No, I've simply come to the conclusion that capital punishment should be reintroduced for certain particularly abhorrent offences. And I'm not alone in that, Nick. That view is shared by millions of people in this country.
True, but those people want hanging brought back for murder and terrorism and stuff. You want to hang people who smoke in restaurants.
So?
Well, I mean, talk about extreme. Executing smokers, that's ridiculous. I mean, I used to smoke.
And you'll probably start up again, but would you if you heard the creaking of the gallows when you lit up? No. You felt the noose tighten around your neck. It's the only way, and it's not right-wing, it's just sensible.
It's barbaric. And you'd hang people who talk through films in cinemas, I suppose.
Look, don't start misrepresenting me, Nick, OK? I have never advocated hanging people who talk through films. I see no sense in that.
Oh, right.
We should behead them.
God's
behead
sake.
Them and then nail their heads above the doors to the stalls as an example to the others. It's the only language these animals understand.
Oh, see, and I suppose you'd do the beheading, would you? You and this vigilante group you've formed.
Please, Nick, we do not like the term vigilante. We are a respectable organisation and we like to be known by our proper title of Citizens Against the Scum. I repeat, it's got nothing to do with being right-wing.
Not right-wing, to advocate the execution of smokers and talkative cinema guys.
And people who let their dogs crap in the street.
Oh, now, they should die.
Mm.
I've always argued for that.
Yeah, well, I'd hang them.
Oh, me too. I'd hang them, and then I'd behead them.
I'd hang them, then I'd behead them, then I'd hang them again.
Mm.
That'd make them think.
Yeah. Because the fines just don't work,
don't
really.
Don't work, nah.
Still,
work.
Sadly, it's all theory, isn't it? Until they change the law.
Not necessarily, Nick.
What do you mean?
Well, the other day, right, me and Libby, we come out the front door with the kids, and sure enough, we walk straight through some dog crap, left by the Labrador, five doors up, OK? In fact, he'd only just done it, and he was walking up the road with his owner. We ran after them, and we said to the owner, now, look, this just isn't good enough, and then we lynched him.
You hanged him?
We strung him up from the lamppost, and we watched him die as we cleaned the wheels of our pushchair.
You mean you murdered him.
Correction, it was not murder, it was justifiable praticide. Okay?
But it's against the law, that's outrageous behaviour.
All right, well, let's just take a straw poll, shall we? How many people in the audience tonight would personally string up someone who let their dog crap on the pavement? Okay? There you are, see? Look at that. A sea of hands there. Some of them holding nooses, so, you know.
Well, I guess I just must be out of tune with the mood of the times.
Yeah. Tonight, in an attempt to explain the unexplainable, the Million Pound Radio Show, sponsored by Barbara Carton Facial Products, the pebble dash that's kind to your skin, brings you the truth behind the mystery of time.
Time, the great enigma, the mysterious force that controls our lives. What is time? To physicists, time is seen as a straight arrow. To Buddhists, time is a circle. And to British Rail, it's a squiggly line that goes backwards. From the earliest civilizations, man has sought to measure and celebrate the passage of time. Ancient peoples built pyramids that cast shadows as the sun moved through the sky.
Oh, great and divine Pharaoh! It is finished! It has taken 30 years and cost the lives of 400,000 slaves, but at last, the great pyramid is complete! See the clear shadow that it casts!
What time do you make it, High Priest?
2:45.
Just as I thought, that pyramid's slow. Move it 6 inches to the left! And I want a cuckoo in it.
Some ancient peoples, like the Druids and the Mayans, used elaborate patterns of standing stones to chart the progress of the sun. Others just turned up late for everything and blamed the roads. Modern science, of course, can now measure time with astonishing precision. Professor Sylvia Kirkup of the Greenwich Observatory.
Well, recently, we undertook the most ambitious research yet to try and create the world's most accurate timepiece by using the regular oscillations of the electrons inside atoms in a piece of cesium to measure the time to within 1/1,000,000,000th of a nanosecond. It was fascinating work, but in the end we gave up and asked a policeman.
Time can be measured objectively, but it remains a subjective concept. To a businessman, time is money. To a prisoner, time is punishment. And to an actor, time's a very bad musical you don't tell anyone you're in. To some, of course, time is an obsession.
Well, you're listening to Dave Zapp here on Fabulous Radio FMXZ, the station for the nation, and the time is 9:42 and 40 seconds precisely. And in a few moments, it'll be 9:43, because that old time is flashing by, and yes, indeed it is, 9:43, and time for the travel news at precisely 9:43 and 15 seconds. And the travel news is that it's dreadful absolutely everywhere. So you're going to be late, could well get the sack, but never mind, because then you'd have more time to listen to Radio FMXZ on Medium Wave 451 at 9:43 and 45, 46, 47 seconds. My God, that time's just sprinting by now. It's 9:44 on the station with more time checks. And this is Dave Zapp at just past 9:44 and 22 seconds. And I'm fat, sad, 50 years old, and I'm still a disc jockey at 9:44 and 53. 3 seconds precisely. This is Dave Zapp saying, what's the point in going on? These time checks are driving me insane. Counting every second just brings home the futility of my life. So this is Dave Zapp on Radio FMXZ saying, I've lost the will to live, and so long at 9:45 precisely.
It was Albert Einstein who revolutionized our understanding of time with his theory of relativity. This is best explained thus. Have you ever been in a train at the station and noticed the train next to you begin to move? You don't know which train is moving until you see a third immobile object like a porter. Now that is relative motion. Since Einstein, theories of time have become even more complex. Some scientists maintain that physically the past does not exist, which means that it is, in fact, impossible to travel back in time. Unless, of course, you visit Bexhill out of season. Nowadays, of course, technology holds out the prospect of cheating time. In America, cryogenics enables terminally ill people to be frozen for hundreds of years and then revived when science can cure them.
Welcome back, Mr. Osgood.
How long have I been frozen?
98 years. Your bank rang, said they'd like to talk to you about your overdraft.
Can you cure me now?
Well, yeah.
So will I make a full recovery?
Well, your brain is in perfect condition, but, Mr. Osgood, there's no easy way to tell you this. You see, while you were frozen, one of the cleaners inadvertently switched off your freezer unit. Only for 20 minutes or so, but I'm afraid the damage was irreversible.
You mean...
I'm afraid so. You're a pool of liquid from the neck down.
Oh, my God. Will I ever walk again, Doctor?
No, you'll spend the rest of your life in a bucket. Sorry.
Will man ever succeed in his quest to defeat time? And if we did achieve eternal life, would we all be happy? The Undertakers wouldn't be too chuffed for a start. Time will remain an enigma that eludes the understanding of man. So perhaps we should leave with the metaphysical 17th century poet Andrew Marvell, penning perhaps the most haunting lines ever written about time.
But at my back I always hear time's winged chariot hurrying near, and yonder all before us lie deserts of vast eternity.
Darling, time's winged chariot's not too poncy, is it?
That's what it'll have to do. It's got to be in by Monday.
And finally, some late news. Following public outrage over the damage that can be inflicted on children, Kenneth Baker has promised further legislation to muzzle, neuter, or destroy Timmy Mallet. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. That should be muzzle, neuter, and destroy Timmy Mallet. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel, with Felicity Montague and Jasper Jacob. It was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.